I'm an investor, and I look at a whole range of publicly traded companies. But a particular interest of mine is vertical-specific software companies. I finally got around to looking at Toast and wanted to understand how the company works a bit better, how customers behave, and learn in general about the market. I thought it would be great to have your perspective on that. A good place to start would be for you to walk me through how you came to join Toast in the first place.
I joined Toast as they were looking to become a proactive account management and customer success team. I had experience in building out customer success and account management teams, being proactive with QBR cadences, SBR cadences, identifying upsell opportunities, and being a strategic trusted advisor. That's where Toast was going at the time. They were identifying growth opportunities and really becoming more of a sales-focused, driven organization from the post-sale side. They had reached out to me, and I had a few good conversations with the VP at that time and felt like it was a great opportunity to join them. I was with them for a couple of years, and then unfortunately, they did a massive round of layoffs. I believe 10% of the company was laid off, about 500 employees, back in January of 2024.
Can you describe the team you were leading, the kind of accounts that you would manage? Just give me an idea of the structure that you were working in and how that was set up.
I initially came into a team of 6 individuals and grew it to 8. It was all SMB customers. Those customers ranged anywhere from, on the low end, about $5,000 in ARR, on the high end, about $20,000 to $22,000 in ARR. The way the team was structured, all the West Coast was my team. I was based on the West Coast. The majority of my team was based on the West Coast. I did have a couple of individuals in the Central Time Zone and a couple of customers in that Central Time Zone, but it was all West Coast, PNW. We had a couple of people in Texas as well that we managed.
How many customers would you typically manage in terms of total ARR for your book of business?
Each person had about $2 million in ARR total. It would have been somewhere right around a couple hundred thousand. I would say in total it was $15 million in ARR total.
And that's when you joined?
That's what we grew it to. When I first joined, we were probably around $9 million to $10 million.
So each rep would manage 100 to 200 accounts?
I would say probably about 120 to 150 accounts. But some of those accounts had multiple different renewal opportunities on it, so that kind of bumped the ARR as well, because they would be different contract time zones. Someone would buy a product, they'd be locked in for a year, and then they would want an additional product, so then they would buy that at a different time of the year. It could be seasonality or something like that, so they would have multiple different deals. For example, someone would have a KDS, a kitchen display screen, so they would have that screen and that software. Then in the summertime, they would start doing outdoor business, so they would ramp up and buy a bunch of handheld devices so that they could maneuver between outside and inside. When the winter would hit, they would probably downsell those handhelds because they no longer need to pay for that subscription. Then it would bump up again in spring or summer again.
Can you describe what an account with $5,000 or $6,000 in ARR looks like compared to an account with $20,000?
There was some difference in product used, but it's not necessarily the product. It's more about the locations. A $5,000 or $6,000 customer would be a customer who has one location, not necessarily a franchise or doesn't have multiple locations throughout a city or state. A $5,000 or $6,000 customer would probably have your standard kitchen display screen. They probably have a couple of handhelds. They have the email marketing tool that we offered at that time. They may have a scan-to-pay feature so customers can pay at the table. That's probably it, enough to eliminate some of their headcount and work a little bit more efficiently and effectively. A $20,000 customer probably has 5 or 10 handhelds. They have 2 kitchen display screens, front office and back office. They're doing the scan to pay at the table. They're doing the rewards program. They're doing the full Toast suite because they have multiple locations that need to talk to each other where you can redeem rewards. Points earned at location A can be redeemed at location B and things of that nature. They have the full suite.
Is it as simple as one location that's about $5,000 or $6,000 in revenue, but the $20,000 account has about 4 times that? Or is it more like 2 to 3 locations?
I would say it's around 3 to 4 locations at max. On average, because we were SMB, we tried to handle no more than 4 locations at max. Anything after that, we would start getting into mid-market, and anything more than that, we would get into enterprise. We did have a couple of locations in our book of SMB that had 8 or 9 locations, but we were working with one central point of contact, like their district manager, that handles that region.
So you have a team, each about 120 accounts, $2 million ARR. How is the CS team structured? Who do the customer success reps report to? Who does that person report to? And how is that structured in terms of the different teams and who manages what kinds of accounts?
Toast doesn't have an account management team. The CS team reported to myself. There were multiple managers of customer success. I had the West Coast and the PNW. There was someone that had the Central US. And then there was an individual who had the East Coast and the South. We had 3 managers that managed SMB customers, 2 managers that managed mid-market, and 1 manager that managed enterprise in each region. Those people all reported to their respective manager. I managed SMB West Coast. All of us managers would roll up to our director of customer success. That individual would roll up to the VP of customer success, who also handled 1 other team that I cannot remember.
Was the director that you reported to a director for SMB in the US? Or was that the director for the West Coast? What was he directly responsible for?
He was the director of SMB for the entire US. There was a director that handled mid-market, who was also the director of enterprise. There were only 2 directors, the director of SMB and director of mid-market and enterprise. Those 2 individuals rolled up to the VP of customer success and RevOps, I believe.
That paints a clear picture of the organization. I'm curious, if I'm a customer service rep for SMB, for example, what does my compensation structure look like in terms of fixed versus variable?
As a customer success manager at Toast when I was there, you had a base salary, and then you were paid quarterly on hitting different KPIs. You were paid quarterly based on your overall percent to goal on certain KPIs. We had 6 KPIs. Sometimes they would change quarter to quarter depending on what we were focused on doing. For example, one of the KPIs was you had to conduct 6 QBRs in the quarter, and those had to be tracked and logged into Salesforce. That was weighted at 10% of your commission. Another 30% or 40% of your quota would be hitting $10,000 in upsell. Another 30% of your quota would be customer health score. Is your customer health score above 90%? That's 80%, and the last 20% could be weighted on different motions we would run, like selling 10 customers on scan to pay. That would do your quarterly variable. If you hit 100% of that, then you got 100% of your variable. If you hit 90%, then you got 90%. 80%, you get 80%, and so forth.
What was the total variable compared to the base?
It depended on what you negotiated and what your seniority was. We had customer success manager, which was entry level. Then you would have a senior customer success manager, then a senior CSM2. Then you would have a principal. Depending on where you fell on that line, your comp structure was either a 70-30 split or an 80-20 split, or maybe someone negotiated a little bit more on their base salary, like an 82-18 split or something like that. We tried to stay at that 80-20 split.
Is the more senior the higher percentage of variable, or is it the other way around?
The seniors have the higher percentage of base.
Why?
I would say they did it that way probably because our role was organic from an upsell standpoint. As I mentioned earlier, especially being on the West Coast, we had less downsell from handheld devices and things of that nature because we didn't focus on seasonality as much as other regions.
It's always sunny in California, right?
Exactly. Because of our regionality and not having as many downsells, if the variable was higher, we would have people making significantly more than what they would be making on the East Coast or the West Coast on that variable piece. We tried to say your base was higher, your variable is less, because we know that you would have fewer downsells. If you had a senior or a principal CSM in California, there was a market adjustment because cost of living is higher, but they wouldn't be making significantly more than what a senior or a principal in Texas would be making, strictly because of the seasonality aspect of it. You didn't want a senior or principal in California making $30,000 more than someone in Texas just because they live in California or because their customer base is in California. The reality is that someone in Texas could manage a customer in California. There may be some time differences, but if that individual is willing to work the time differences, it's not a big issue.
Can you walk me through at what point the customer success team starts managing an account? Is it when the contract is signed or when the customer has been onboarded and everything is implemented? How does that work?
The customer success team is 100% responsible after the customer is onboarded. The contract is signed by the AE, the sales rep. The sales rep plugs it into our format for the implementation team to start working on that customer, getting them implemented, getting stuff set up, getting equipment mailed out, doing all the trainings for the restaurant, making sure that the GM of the restaurant has flown down the trainings to the team. Once they have completed or graduated implementation, I am then flagged, or my respective counterparts in the other regions are flagged, that a customer has been graduated. At that point, we assign a CSM. As the manager, we would assign the CSM based on book of business. We tried to keep all books of business equal from a compensation standard and capacity standpoint. We would assign them. The CSM would then send out the welcome email, letting them know that they are the dedicated account manager. We had a nice little template, a little doc that a CSM could send to a customer that explains who they are, what their main core responsibilities are, and sets expectations. From there, they start building that relationship.
I want to go back to the bonus metrics. What were the metrics during your time that stayed the most consistently important?
Downsell / churn was always number one. That stayed consistent. Upsell stayed consistent. Upsell was always there and stayed consistent. The amount did fluctuate from quarter to quarter because we had busy seasons and slow seasons. We wanted to put stretch goals, but we didn't want to put in a goal that was unobtainable. Obviously, you would lose people if you did that. Downsell, churn, and upsell stayed consistent. Customer health stayed consistent. We always ran some sort of new product metric that stayed consistent. It could be scan to pay one quarter, a different product the second quarter, a different product the third quarter, or the same product for three quarters. Wherever we felt that we had a lot of white space in that product, or we rolled out a new product, we would focus on that. QBRs always stayed consistent. Those were the 4 to 5 that would always stay consistent. Then there would always be an added one depending on how the SMB org was doing and something we wanted to focus on. We would change that up from time to time, or sometimes we wouldn't put anything in there. It depended on where we saw an uptick in something, or if we had a new product that we wanted to go after and say, we want to upsell our customers on this product because we know the value.
On the churns, maybe let's start with, how did you calculate churn? Everybody does it a bit differently, so I'm curious how you guys looked at churn.
We looked at churn from a couple of different standpoints. We looked at product churn and customer churn. Customer churn was when a customer completely churned. The restaurant is moving off Toast or going to a competitor, so they're completely moving off Toast. Or the restaurant got bought by another location or another company, and they didn't keep Toast. Or they bought the location and they're selling it. Someone comes in, they buy the restaurant because someone can't make their payments or whatever, and then instead of keeping the restaurant, they use the location, so they sell it. We've had instances where restaurants caught on fire and burned down, so obviously they're not using Toast. We looked at it from an actual customer churn standpoint, and then we looked at product churn. Again, having other locations that would have seasonality things where handhelds would go up for 3 months or for a quarter, and then handhelds would drop off. We looked at downsell and product churn from that. Product downsell means the customer reduces the number of handhelds, increases the number of handhelds, increases the number of KDS screens, decreases the number of KDS screens, or they completely churn the product and say they don't need the product at all. That's how we would look at churn. How we would calculate churn would be a whole different mathematical equation, looking at the SMB organization as a whole and saying, we're approaching winter time. So while the West Coast will make up some of that downsell of handhelds on the East Coast because they got snow, what does our expectation of downsell look like? We would carry that across the entire org so that it balances out and is flat from that standpoint. That number would be there for Q4 because that's the wintertime for half the US. And we would disperse that across the entire SMB organization so that everyone still had a fair chance. We weren't overshooting or underestimating any type of churn to an investor or private equity firm or whatever.
What was customer churn typically like over an entire year?
Customer churn as a whole. I wouldn't know that number as an entire whole because I was focused on my region.
Let's say for SMB or for your region in SMB, the biggest scale you know about.
For my region, my team, our customer churn was around 2.2%. Product churn for my region, SMB on the West Coast, was around 6.5%. This included handhelds coming in and out and downsells, but actual products being churned was around 6.5%. Order and pay at the table was a huge product for us, especially during COVID, when restaurants needed minimal waiter or waitress interaction. As COVID subsided and people could get back out into the world, we saw a huge increase in consumers wanting physical interaction with people because they hadn't had that interaction. They wanted someone to come to the table, to have a conversation, to ask questions like, "What do you recommend from the menu?" We saw a huge increase in churn of that product, which raised the overall number. On the East Coast, their product churn was probably around 10%. Largely due to seasonality on the West Coast and Southern side, their customer churn was right around 3.5% to 4%.
What explains the difference between the customer churn on the West Coast versus East Coast?
The East Coast had a lot more locations of the same restaurant, the same logo, just multiple locations. The West Coast had a lot of mom and pop, specialty type restaurants. We had a lot of vegan restaurants on the West Coast. Instead of having one restaurant with 10 locations, we would have one restaurant with 2 locations, and we'd have a lot more of those. It was more fragmented.
Even 2% or even 4% sounds relatively low when you think of how often restaurants go out of business. Did that number include natural restaurants going out of business, or was it really just isolated to customers moving to someone else?
It was more customers moving somewhere else. Restaurants do go out of business because their profit margins are very slim. But our product was slightly more expensive than some of our competitors in that space at that time. We had a lot of different levers we could pull from discounts. If you bundled, we could offer a bigger discount. Even though they operated on small profit margins and going out of business was common for restaurants, because of how large our books of business were, we saw a lot more acquisitions or change of hands and managers and repurposing names of restaurants versus restaurants completely going out of business. There were plenty of times where a restaurant would be called ABC Restaurant, and then 6 months later, it would be called XYZ Restaurant. They kept the same menu. The owner got out of it. They weren't happy. Someone else came in and bought it and said, "We're going to change the name, but keep the menu. Keep the same feel, or we'll change it up a little bit." Most of the time, one of the competitive advantages was if a customer absorbed that restaurant and kept the Toast platform in that restaurant, there wouldn't need to be any new implementation, which was a big part of our fee. Implementation took a very long time and cost a lot of money. We had third-party technical people who would go out and rewire your Ethernet cables, your cores, and your Wi-Fi to make sure that you had complete service around the building and eliminated those dead spots. So if a customer sold their restaurant to someone else and they didn't want to absorb that Toast equipment, that restaurant owner would pull all that stuff out and send it back to us. They would get their money back for the hardware. As the new customer, you would have to go out and find a new POS system. If you called Toast back up, you would have to go through a whole re-implementation. You would have to go through all those fees of setting it up. Your pricing structure could be different because now you're starting a whole new contract. As a new restaurant owner, you're better off absorbing that POS system versus starting fresh.
That 2% figure basically already includes a restaurant completely shutting down, going bankrupt. And if the new restaurant that comes in doesn't use Toast, but uses Clover, for example,
right,
the 2% figure includes that? Or did I understand that correctly?
No, that 2% was post-calculation of accounting for churn already. When we made our numbers in our budget, no one on my team or my counterparts were in that conversation. They had a whole mathematical equation. Based on what I was told, I believe they had an expected churn of 3.5% year over year. That's what they expected year over year of complete customer churn. From there, my region had an additional 2%.
That lines up with my understanding of how they looked at it. On the upselling part, you were incentivized to upsell. I understand that with seasonality, it might change a little bit, but over an entire year, what would you say the upsell targets roughly were?
All the CSMs were responsible for anywhere between $10,000 and $15,000 in sales every quarter, except the principal CSM had slightly higher targets. The principal would fluctuate between $15,000 and $20,000 every quarter. In the entire SMB org, we had 3 principals. There was basically one on each team. I had one on the West Coast, there was one in the Central Mid-America, and then the other one on the East and South.
If I'm managing a book of business of $2 million and I'm expected to do, let's call it, $10,000 a quarter in upsell, that's $40,000 a year. That's basically 2%, right?
Yes.
That doesn't seem like that much if I think about it.
It's not a lot. The reason is that number was almost a given, and everyone always exceeded it. Upsell was less of a focus at Toast, because once you had the Toast platform, everything else was more organic. If you needed a handheld, you'd go get a handheld. And the handheld was only $25 extra in subscription per month. The dollar amount was very low, and the upsell piece was organic. It was almost a given. Our focus was preventing any type of churn. So we tried to explain why, even during seasonality, they should keep those handhelds and subscriptions active. We'd explain to customers that we'd done a bundled deal, and if they got rid of these products, the price could change next summer. We put in those levers to try to keep those subscriptions ongoing, versus having a customer come in and out. We wanted to be more consistent with our revenue coming in versus having big swings. We also had a big focus on the different products like scan to pay at the table and different things of that nature. We wanted to focus on selling those products to our customers and making sure that they saw value in retaining those products. The upsell piece happened so organically and through natural conversations that we didn't put an emphasis on the upsell as much as we put on retaining customers, making sure that they didn't go to a competitor, making sure that we were doing 6 QBRs a quarter at the bare minimum, making sure that implementations from the implementation side before it ever got to us went smoothly, and making sure that customers saw the value of our POS system so that they didn't churn versus focusing on upsell that just happened organically.
For your book of business, how much were you able to upsell compared to your target? If your target is, let's say for one rep, $2 million book of business, and you need to do $40,000 in upsell a year, what would a CSM rep typically do?
That's hard to say. I know that I grew our book of business over the 2 years by about $1.5 million. But that $1.5 million growth was not only upsell, but also expansion. When I say expansion, I'm referring to having a new location come on board. You'd have restaurant A with a location on the south side and a location on the north side as well. That north side location, even though it's run by the same district manager, the GM can use a totally different POS. The expansion opportunities were huge for us because we didn't classify those as upsell. We classified them as expansion opportunities because we wanted to get our POS in that whole ecosystem of all those restaurants. If you were able to do that, then you were able to carry on your rewards points. On the south side, you could redeem them on the north side. You're building that customer experience for our customers' customers, because now you can redeem at different locations.
Out of that $1.5 million, how much came from expansion to another location compared to upselling an existing location?
I would definitely say $1 million, being conservative, came from expansion versus upsell. When you did the expansion, what came with that expansion was the handheld devices, the different products, and so forth.
Let's say I'm a single SMB location, and I spend the average between $6,000 and $7,000. How does that break down in terms of what a typical customer would typically pay? How much comes from the POS subscription versus hardware, online ordering, payroll, and all these different products? How should I break that $7,000 down in my mind?
I would say at least 60% of that came from the POS system. Another 20% came from the subscriptions like the kitchen display screen, the KDS, the handhelds, and so forth. The remaining came from the additional products like payroll, scan to pay, rewards, the DoorDash integrations, and so forth. A lot of that is because the pricing of those things was less. We're not talking about a handheld being $150 or $200 a month like what you see in other SaaS companies. This was $25 or $15.
Out of that $7,000, 60% of that, let's call it $4,000 or a little bit less, is the POS. Then you have the hardware, like the KDS and handhelds on top of that. And the rest is payroll, online ordering, and the different combinations of add-on products that an SMB might have.
Right, the hardware is purchased by the customer. We did have a return program where you could return it for a fraction of the price, because we would recycle it or repurpose it if we needed to. But the hardware wasn't included in any of our numbers because the customer bought that and owned that. It's just the subscriptions tied to it.
Would they pay for that up front, or would you split the payments across the one-year contract?
99% of the time, customers are buying the hardware up front. There are exceptions for the larger customers or multiple locations where we'd work out something where they could pay for the hardware over a certain course. We would try to make it financially feasible because we wanted to close the deal. But the hardware piece was something that was paid up front the majority of the time by the customer. Or they would finance it. We tried to do it with Toast Capital, but it would sometimes be financed. They would get their own financing.
You said 99% of the time they buy it up front.
How much of that is financed, would you say?
It would be hard for me to know because I wasn't on the billing side. I very rarely saw it. In my time there, in my book of business, I saw Toast Capital used 3 or 4 times. I don't know what the interest rates were or any of that, but I know that I very rarely saw Toast Capital used. I do know that during the COVID period, we were giving hardware away for free because we were trying to help customers. That was our whole pitch of, we're here to support you during this time of need.
Can you help me understand how you tracked customer health and what the signs are? What's the life cycle? Asked a different way, customers are onboarded, implemented. You get the responsibility. They're spending $7,000. How do you monitor that customer health and look out for churn, look out for upsell possibilities? How does that work?
Great question. Outside of the organic upsells and processing paperwork and making sure that everything's up and running, 90% of our day was focusing those QBRs. Within those QBRs, we're looking at adoption and activation. Activation means, is the product on and functioning? You come out of implementation understanding how to use the product, and implementation turns it on. There would be customers that would go in and turn certain things off. They bought it because it was cheaper in a bundle, but they didn't need it, so they turned it off. Our job as the CSM was to make sure it was activated. If you're paying for something, even if it's in a bundle, and you're not using it, that runs the risk of being churned. We're looking at, is it activated? That's first and foremost. Then, have they adopted it? Meaning, depending on the product, have they had X amount of transactions in the past month on this product? Meaning that they're using it. Does the customer have the product? Is it turned on? Are they using it? If all those boxes have been checked, then our QBR is centered around, how is the product working? Any complaints, any issues, any recommendations? We're going through that whole customer journey and that whole ROI. Are you seeing a return on your investment with that product? If for some reason any one of those 3 boxes are not checked, then that conversation becomes more of a QBR around, why aren't you using it? What do you need help on? Do you need more training? Do certain staff members need training because they're new? In the restaurant industry, staff members change quickly. It could be a new staff member who came in, knows how to use the reservations and screens right up front, but was never trained on the handheld. They're not using the handheld because they don't know how to use it. They'll take your card and take it up to the register. A lot of our day was making sure that customers were getting the value out of the product and seeing the value out of the product to be able to prevent that churn or prevent them from going somewhere else like Clover.
These metrics that you tracked during your tenure, how would you say they went over time, like over those 2 years?
Our customer health score was always in the green. Our NPS, I don't remember what the NPS was. I think it was relatively high for the restaurant space. I know our customer satisfaction score was anywhere between 92 and 96%. Our NPS was calculated a little bit differently because we all know Net Promoter Score asks 2 or 3 questions. Would you recommend? And whatever the other question is. Our CSAT gave us more in-depth insights because when a customer had to go to support because something wasn't working, we all know that customers don't remember all the good things. They remember the most recent experience. And if that most recent experience was negative, we're looking at, what was the time to resolve it? How quickly did support resolve it? How quickly did we acknowledge their email that they sent in, that they had a request? Was there a loss of business or loss of money? Or could they not function so that their customers couldn't pay, or their customers couldn't see the right items that they're ordering on DoorDash, or whatever the case may be? That's how we measured more of our customer health. NPS was in there, but from our standpoint at the ground level, it was our CSAT, product adoption, product activation.
How did product adoption and product activation trend over time? When you started compared to when you left?
When I started, it wasn't that good, strictly because they were reactive, which is why I was hired to come in and reshape the org to be a little bit more proactive. We're getting out ahead of renewal conversations 90 days out. We were having QBRs that had a deck where you came in and instead of having a conversation of, this is a check-in and how's everything going, it was more of, I wanted to sit down and talk to you about how we're seeing trends in your region, in your industry, in your specific kind of restaurant, and what your neighbors are doing that have Toast, and why your numbers are not relatively the same. They were strategic conversations with a deck behind it that, as a customer in the restaurant industry, you hadn't seen before. You could start looking at it and say, maybe we are eliminating our overhead, or we are making more money, or this is one of the items that is popular during this time, so we should have it on the menu during these hours. But then after these hours, take it off because we're not getting anyone ordering it. Things of that nature. They were strategic conversations. Product activation and adoption was definitely on the incline. And that's what helped lead to the reduced churn.
How good or sophisticated would you say Toast's customer success organization and approaches are compared to others you have experienced in the past or currently?
It's different. I have been leading customer success teams. I'm a director of an account management team now. I would say that Toast's customer success team was very good. And when I joined, we started putting things in place that were excellent from an adoption and activation standpoint. However, I don't think the upsell component should have been part of their responsibilities. Not because they weren't capable, but because there was so much room for upsell that there needed to be another team, which they didn't have. I feel an account management team should have sat in that space as well, so they could work on upsell while customer success focused on adoption and activation. At all the other companies I have worked at, including my current company, we have an account management team solely focused on upsell and expansion. The adoption and activation piece is handled by our customer success team. At my current company, the customer success team goes in, identifies product usage and activation trends, and then feeds that information to my account managers prior to renewal conversations. My account managers know what the customer is using, can plug in that data, and this helps with contract renewals, identifying white space, showing return on investment, and upselling. At Toast, because the customer success person was doing all of that, plus managing support tickets and other tasks, the upsell component became less of a focus. That's why the company chose to make the upsell numbers low and achievable, because they knew you were doing all this other work. You weren't going to go out and find these opportunities and focus on growth from that standpoint.
I believe Toast does have a growth team that's responsible solely for calling and upselling. Was that already in place when you were there?
No, if they have that now, it wasn't there during my time. When I was there, you had your sales team focused on net new logos. The sales team would identify opportunities, but under the leadership I had, the VP and others who aren't there anymore, we all left around the same time. They left on their own accord. They weren't part of the RIF like me. At that time, the AEs were going in and identifying opportunities for upsell. The problem we had on the sales side was that those AEs were so focused on going after current customers that they weren't generating any new business from net new logos. They were trying to go after the low-hanging fruit that didn't bring in net new logos. If Toast does have a growth team now, I wouldn't know what that looks like.
How did you typically think about pricing come renewal time for these accounts?
That one's challenging. It's challenging in the sense that we did price increases on our subscriptions, but we did them because we were trying to right-size customers. When I say right-size, I mean that our AEs were selling deals under our rate cards because they were just trying to close deals. Once that customer was sold and went through implementation and we got the customer, we weren't necessarily looking at pricing. We would see things when we had conversations and in the back of our minds think, this is going to be an interesting renewal conversation. But when we got to the renewal conversation, a lot of it was trying to right-size them, to bring them up to a more acceptable amount compared to our rate card. It would be a 10 or 15% price increase to try to get them up to the respective amount. We looked at it as right-sizing to get them back to a more acceptable level that would fall into what an account management discount level would look like. If an AE was good and they didn't have any ridiculous discounting, then it just became your standard 7% price increase, which is what I had our company put into our terms and conditions. In the SaaS industry, that's what I had typically always seen. Customers really didn't blink an eye at a 5 or 7% price increase because it was assumed. Auto renewal year over year with a price increase was just assumed. Even at the company I'm at today, it's assumed there is a price increase for platform and constant improvement.
So those conversations, for a typical account that already has a normally priced contract, it would usually be 7%, and you try to push that a little bit higher. How much pushback did you typically get when you were trying to raise it 10% or 15%?
The 10 to 15% price increase happened because of the huge discounting that the customer had received from the account executive. We got a lot of pushback on this. That 10 to 15 or 20% price increase became a conversation where we had to sit the customer down and walk them through why they got that huge discount. Was it because when they initially signed up, they bought 20 handhelds and signed up in the summertime or whatever? Then there's the seasonality again, which is not as much of an issue on the West Coast as it is in other locations. But just to give you the lay of the land, a customer would decrease their handhelds at renewal. They would decrease the renewal, decrease their handhelds, and then it would roll into renewal, and they had not bought those handhelds back. Obviously, you have lost that bundled discount pricing and so forth. So we would say, you had 20, this is the pricing at 20. You now have 8. Your pricing does increase, and it decreased based on 8. But then also, when it increased based on 8, we were combating the fact that for 20 units, it may have been a 20% discount on our rate card, but the AE gave you 50%. You are at 8. The discount is 10%. It is not apples to apples, 1-to-1, because I am holding you at that 10%. I am not giving you the 10% plus another 5%. It is what it is at the volume of 8. Those conversations were tough because then they would say, well, I'll just go back to my AE. Then they would go back to the AE. And then the AE would tell us what to do. It became a situation where I had to go to my VP and say, you're telling me to hold at this level? They went back to the AE. So it was basically like, the AE closes the deal, and then the AE has to report to the powers that be and say, this is why I'm giving this at this price. So it became, to your point, a little bit more political. If we're giving this discount, you close the deal, and I'm not getting in trouble for closing at this discount.
This is useful. I really appreciate it. I have learned a lot. Is there anything that I have not asked that I should have? Anything I missed?
I know that things have changed since I have been there. Obviously, I know that you are looking to invest in different companies, specifically potentially in Toast. I have no bad blood with Toast. I understand riffs and layoffs, and I understand that it's first in, first out. I get it. I still talk to some of those individuals. I don't know how much things have changed, but I would say from my standpoint, I still have stock in Toast. I still buy Toast. I know it has significantly dropped, but I do value their product. I think they have a good team over there. I think they have a good product. I would say they are a little bit more expensive compared to Square, Clover, or some of those other point-of-sale systems. But I think they do have a good capture of the market space. They do have a good customer success team. They do have a good customer service team. I am an investor. I'm not an investor in this space, but I know that they are branching into hotels and so forth, and hospitality.
We'll have to see about that. I'm also doing work on that, but we'll figure that out.
I think, depending on how deep your pockets are, it's a good investment. I think they are probably a leader in that space, but I also know that there are other competitors quickly trying to capture market space as well.
The beautiful thing is that I can buy one share, right? So the deep pockets is not an issue. I'm just trying to figure out how the business works, how customers think, and how they think about the product, and trying to form an opinion about what might be over the next 5 to 10 years. We'll decide based on that. But if nothing comes of it, at least I'll have learned a lot. That's the approach.